Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
We come into religious activity with a different expectation. So when I open my Bible, I expect God to speak. When I show up on a campus, I expect God to move. But when I'm driving or when I'm answering email or when I'm studying, I have a completely different set of expectations. And we just want to systematically erode all of those divisions because we believe God's speaking and moving and acting all the time.
Powerful words there from Mike Erie. It doesn't sound like somebody who's a pastor, but he is. Doesn't sound like somebody who's even an author. Well, okay, I'll give you that. Mike is a really good author and a great communicator. And today here on the Homeward broadcast, he joins parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns for part two of a continuing conversation on recapturing the wonder of life with God. These are principles that Mike puts out forth so brilliantly in his book called Astonished. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Homeward is on the air and online because of your prayers and faithful financial support. If you can give a gift of $25, $50, even $100 today at homeward.com, we would love to hear from you. We really appreciate that financial support. And now, here's Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Mike Erie with us. It's a continuing conversation. We're talking about recapturing the wonder of life with God. He's written a great book called Astonished, Recapturing the Wonder, Awe, and Mystery of Life with God, and are you in for a treat today? He's the senior pastor of the First Evangelical Free Church in Fullerton, California. He has previously also served at Mariners Mission Viejo in Southern California and also a great church called Rock Harbor. He's the author of a number of popular books. He has a wife and three children. They make their home in Southern California, and it is a privilege to have him with us. Great to have you back.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
You know, one of the reasons we don't fully experience God with awe and wonder, I think, is that we're looking for him in the wrong places. And you kind of talk about that.
Yeah, I think that part of what it's easy to do is to segment life into different compartments. You've got your religious, you've got your irreligious, you've got your sacred, you've got your secular. And I see that all the time. People will talk to me about how I got into ministry. And my answer is always, well, I became a follower of Jesus, right? So whether you're at carpool right now or whether you're listening at home or whether you're a student, I mean, you're in full-time ministry. The only difference is I get paid from a church as opposed to other folks, but the calling and the identity is absolutely and utterly the same. So part of why we don't see God move is we come into religious activity with a different expectation. So when I open my Bible, I expect God to speak. When I show up on a campus, I expect God to move. But when I'm driving or when I'm answering email or when I'm studying, I have a completely different set of expectations. And we just want to systematically erode all of those divisions because we believe God's speaking and moving and acting all the time.
Yeah, you know, in a previous conversation, we talked about finding God at the end of the rope. And one of the things you talk about so well is you talked about the thorn in the flesh.
Yes.
And I'll hear people say, I have this thorn in my flesh, or I had a thorn in my flesh, or whatever. And it's a term that Paul used. I want you to unpack that, because I think we can learn a lot by that conversation that you had in your book, Astonished.
Absolutely. So it's a very famous passage where Paul is boasting. He's having to defend his apostolic credentials against super apostles who were more flashy or more dynamic or whatever. And so Paul does this very interesting thing. On the one hand, he starts boasting, but he starts boasting about the things that show his weakness. So I've been shipwrecked and I've received the 40 lashes minus one or whatever it is. And then he gets into this vision that he's had. He talks about it in kind of a roundabout way, but then he says, to keep me from becoming conceited, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh. Now, we all know this. This is a very famous passage in the Bible. We're not sure what the thorn is exactly, but one of the things that God does in response is say that my grace is sufficient for you. And then the standard translation is, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. And I think that's a legitimate way to translate it. I argue a different way of translating it, where the argument is, my power is shown best when yours is brought to its end, Paul. Mm. My power, God, God's power is shown best when Paul's power is limited. And so there's this cliche that I want to beat up on that says, God will never give you more than you can handle. And I know where we get that. It's 1 Corinthians 10, God will never let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But we've kind of used that as, well, if God's given it, then I can handle it. And I don't think that's true. I think God is in the business of relentlessly giving us more than we can handle. And I point to people like Gideon, where, you know, 33,000 Israelites against however many Midianites was just too many. Why? Because Gideon, in your strength, will think that you won the battle. So let's strip it down to 300 and go to war. Why? So that God will get the glory. Paul says the same thing. That is why this treasure is put in jars of clay, so that we know that it's not of us, but it's of him. So God, I think one of God's projects is to allow for, to set us within, or to redeem circumstances that put us in places and over our heads that then have to call us to trust. Because so often faith, what I want faith to mean is I don't have to actually trust. So God, write it on a wall for me. Make the path clear for me. I'm not moving until you speak. And that's, in one sense, that can be a great and holy posture, but in another sense, that can just be a form of control, right? I don't want to have to risk. I don't want to have to possibly fail. And so I'm going to wait until you say it so I can blame you if it goes sideways.
And we do have a risk aversion, don't we, sometimes with our faith?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I've learned about my heart is that Christianity is a form of risk management.
Yeah.
So I have all of these agreements with God about sexuality or about children or about money. And when he doesn't hold his end of the bargain, I kind of am a little disappointed. And he keeps reminding me it's not a bargain he's interested in, it's my faith that he's interested in.
Now, you also say, and this going right along with it, you say that there's a paradox with strength and weakness. So you're kind of thinking that we learn more about God and are more astonished by him in our weakness than in our strength.
Absolutely. That is the clear, unequivocal teaching of the Bible, that using human weakness is central to God's revelation of himself. So, hey, Abraham and Sarah, oh, you're barren. Fantastic. Jacob, you're a schemer and a manipulator. Fantastic. Paul, you've been murdering Christians. Who better to preach to the Gentiles than the Jew of all Jews, right? I mean, this is what he does. Hey, Solomon, let's have you write the book on love and marriage as a serial adulterer and philanderer. David, let's have you write the Psalms, right? Because you've been a murderer and a drunkard and an adult. I mean, it's just, you just go, yes. And so when you have people in the church feeling like they're not worthy to either be there or be used, the wrong answer is to say, yep, you're right. You got to get your act cleaned up. The right answer, if their heart is humble, is to simply say, no, it's precisely you, precisely that kind of person that God does some of his best stuff with. And those who see him most clearly turn out to be the ones who are literally at the end of themselves.
Yeah.
And so often what we do in church is that we're just continually trying to operate out of strength, whereas God just seems to have a different project altogether.
Yeah, I like that. I was speaking at a church not too long ago, and a guy who I know came up to me afterwards, kind of in the front, and he asked for prayer. And then he said, you know, I continue to have the same illustration. We'd had conversations in the past. I've continued to have the same, really, he was kind of confessing his sins.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, how long is God going to, you know, put up with me? And I said, well, I don't think you deserved his forgiveness the first time.
Yes.
The truth of the matter is,
yes,
that it's not really as much about you, it's about him. And when you get that down, you probably will want to quit. This is a horrible habit that you have, and it's going to mess up your family. You already know it's messing up your family, it's messing up your finances.
That's right.
It's time to quit. Stop it.
Right.
But at the same time, you didn't deserve it the first time. So in in not deserving
that's
it
right.
the first time,
that's right.
You really, it takes some of the pressure off of us.
Oh, it absolutely does.
And yet I think there's so many people who, and I think a lot of guys are like this, and you wrote a book about this, but I think a lot of guys don't want to go to church because they, you know, cussed out somebody or they did this or that.
Right.
Can they still walk with Jesus and do that? Well, obviously, as you grow in your faith, there's certain habits and whatnot that you're hopefully going to change, but there's still stuff that there are people who are not coming to church because they don't think they're good enough.
Right. And whatever the church does to add to that is sin. End of story. Yeah. Anything that the church does to say you got to get cleaned up before you follow Jesus yes. is an impediment to the gospel, and it is absolute sin.
Yes.
And so part of what we have to do, whether we're a big church, a small church, an ethnic church, a non-ethnic, I mean, whatever it is you've got to allow for weakness to be put on display in ways that, of yeah. course, don't cause people to stumble, but in ways that invite and encourage the brokenness that is common to the entire body to be brought forth in an atmosphere of grace and recognition that healing doesn't come from being more ashamed or trying harder. Healing comes from recognizing in your badness, you are actually loved.
Right.
And in the work of Jesus, you are accepted ahead of time, and there's nothing you can do. Now, we all know that theory, but nothing in our world works this way, so that we just default to glorifying strength. That's what American culture does.
Yeah, and you know, it's fascinating because you and I are having a conversation about a pastor we know who's very authentic. And
yes.
in his openness, people are not running away from Jesus. They're running toward
Absolutely.
Jesus because of that. You know, I came from a family where my family did not walk with the Lord. My dad was an alcoholic, and you know, I became a Christian, and they were like upset about it
yeah.
when I was 16 years old. But the fascinating side to it is their impression was that you had to kind of have it all cleaned up.
That's
and when
right.
And it took years for them to figure out that, no, it's not about cleaning it up and then getting right with God.
That's
it's
right.
about getting right with God, coming with all of your you know
yep.
messes and foibles. And I find that the best way we can actually, if you were you know using the term witness about
That's right.
the love of God,
That's
is,
right.
is through our weakness, not through our strength.
That is exactly right. And so how does that look? You know, part of what we do in the book is we talk about how It is the mystery, it is the wonder, it is the awe, it is the difficulty, it is the pain, it is the disappointment. Those are the things that if you run to them and not use Jesus to hide from them, you'll find him and be used by him. Whatever your pain is, I mean, there a buddy of mine who's a pastor out here has three great questions he uses to determine what your ministry should be. He always asks, who's your neighbor? What's in your hand? And then this is my favorite one. Where do you limp? And it's taken from the idea of Jacob wrestling with God. And he comes away with a limp. And that anyone who's wrestled with God will limp. And that place of pain, if you let it, becomes a place of such incredible ministry. Paul even says this, comfort with people with the comfort you've received.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Where do you limp? We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Mike Erie with us today. When we come back, I'm going to ask him this question. He happens to think that we do people a disservice if we make Jesus too attractive. And I want to talk to him about that. We'll be right back. Roger's going to tell you about the book. The book is called Astonished. And by the way, I've read it page for page, word for word, and I love this book.
Yeah, me too. I loved it too. I think it's a great resource. And if you go to homeward.com and take a look at what we've got on for today's program, you'll find a link to Mike's website. You can learn more about the book, Astonished. Also want to remind you as a parent, if you're thinking to yourself right now, gosh, they've been talking about this, but boy, I wonder if my kids are going to start wandering away from church because they want to be astonished by life. The kids use the word amazing a lot, and they want to be amazed. Life in Christ really is amazing, and it is kind of a thrill ride of sorts. You can incorporate that dialogue into your everyday conversation with your kids, and Dr. Jim Burns' book, Faith Conversations for Families, will help you do just that. You can order Faith Conversations for Families from Dr. Jim Burns at homeward.com, our online resource center. And when you do, as with all of Jim's books, if you purchase them from homeward.com, a portion of the proceeds goes to supporting our ministry. We rely on that financial support, and we really appreciate it. Learn more at homeward.com. And now let's get back into it. Here is the conclusion of today's conversation. Once again, with Mike Erie, here's Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Mike Erie with us today. I admit it. I've had a pastor crush on him. I love his messages. My wife listens to his podcast all the time. Anyway, he was our pastor for a while. He's now at the senior pastor of First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton in California. And he's the author of several great books, an incredible communicator, as if you're just joining us, you will hear in a moment. And he makes his home in Southern California with his wife and his three children. We were talking before, and I kind of teased the audience, but you have a problem if people make Jesus too attractive.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, on the one hand, we're told to make Jesus attractive, right? Paul says that to Timothy to tell the slaves, live in a way that makes Jesus attractive. So that's certainly true, but there's a sense in which we play into the consumer instincts of our culture in ways that I think set people up for disappointment. So during Easter time, there is always a great deal of pressure to make sure that you've invited everybody and you put your best foot forward. And I read of churches, I know a few myself, that will give away things at Easter. So come to our Easter service. And we even had one church in the area a couple of years ago that's giving away a free car.
Wow.
And all you got to do is show, exactly. You just got to show up, put your name in the plate, and you know, you're registered. And there's a part of me that is utterly sympathetic,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you do want to put your best foot forward.
Right.
But the more I study Jesus, the more I realize he never begged, he never bribed, he never dazzled, he never overpromised. In fact, at some of the times of his greatest popularity, he would either withdraw to a lonely place or he would offer a hard teaching. And so what is it about Jesus that when they were trying to crown him by force, he resisted it? And what is it about us that simply seeks to add or highlight the benefits of followership rather than Jesus himself? And so one of the things that I find it needed to be said over and over and over again is that the reward of following Jesus is Jesus. It's not the free car, and it's not the Ginsu knives. It's not the peace or the forgiveness or whatever promised health and wealth. It is Jesus himself who is the treasure. Now, thankfully, he accepts any faith, regardless if it's using him towards some greater end. I just wish to point out, though, that if you've sold Jesus as the answer to certain felt needs, when he inevitably disappoints those felt needs, then you're set up wondering there's something wrong with him or there's something wrong with me. And we just want to say, no, the gospel itself, the project of Jesus in you is not about making you happy. It's not about making you healthy and however you want to. It is doing something far more radical than that. It's the deconstruction of you and the reconstruction of him in you so that he puts himself on display through these broken vessels. And so part of what we've used Christianity to do is to just keep us from that broken place.
Yeah, boy, that's good stuff. You know, I wish America could hear that, because again, sometimes we get sold a bill of goods that, you know, you're going to be prettier and you're going to be happier, and, you know, you're going to be richer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've oftentimes told people that when I became a Christian, I think I had more problems.
That's right. Yep.
And there was more of almost a desperate faith. And you speak to that in your book. You talk about desperate faith.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you take all of the encounters of Jesus with people, and you compare how he reacts to the ones who are desperate and the ones who react, how he reacts to the ones that aren't, it's two entirely different reactions. So if you're going to dig a hole through a roof, if you're going to fight through a crowd to touch the hem of his robe, if you're going to stand by the roadside and shout all the more when you're told to be quiet, what do you want me to do for you? You know, how can I heal? I mean, it's just blessing and it's restoration. But if you've got riches you're not willing to part with, if you've got a father you've got to bury, if there's any sort of ambivalence, Jesus would simply let you walk away. And he would not overdo it. And what was so fascinating to me about that is that I very often see my Jesus following as an expression of non-desperation, right? I've got him already. Why do I have to pray for daily bread when I can just go buy some? I live in the most blessed country in the history of the world. And yet, look at our Christian bestsellers, and they're about how to be more blessed. And so you have this insatiable greed for affluence, for leisure, for luxury, and the project of Jesus is so antithetical to the American dream. And we just have to put it to death. We just have to put it to death.
You know, it's fascinating you'd say that. I wrote a book a number of years ago called 10 Building Blocks to a Solid Family, and the publisher called it To a Happy Family.
Mm.
And I fought him and I lost, because you understand that.
I do understand how that goes.
And finally, the book actually did really well. Because who doesn't want a happy family?
That's right.
But that wasn't my point. So I finally asked them if they would change the title. And I'll be honest with you. The book didn't sell as much with solid
family
than with happy family.
That's right.
But I felt like I was more of a person of integrity.
That's right.
You know, with that. And
because if you try to create a happy family,
right,
you're dead. If that's the goal,
right,
there's no way.
Right.
There's
right.
no way. The choices you make towards a happy family are so different than the choices you make for a solid family.
Yeah. Yeah. I just have my kids at Disneyland all the time.
That's
and then
right.
they wouldn't be happy after a while because they'd be tired of it. Or
exactly.
Whatever it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mike, you talk about surrender in your book, Astonished. And I really think that's a part
that in some ways is missing today. I was thinking about my own children. They've been raised in the church. I wasn't raised in the church. So I was astonished by just the fact that I showed up. You know, I mean,
totally.
It was great. But these are kids who have been raised in the church. And a lot of our listeners have kids who have been raised in the church.
Yeah.
And my kids went through some bumps in the road. They weren't always the, you know, the leader of the worship band.
What?
And they didn't always do all these things. Yeah.
I can't believe it.
So even my daughter, Christy, who also has a pastor crush on you, this is a theme, what we're doing here, Ben and Roger today. But you know, I remember Christy, when she went to Point Loma, she wrote, I had to disown my parents' faith to own my own faith.
Oh, wow.
And part of that was she needed to surrender.
That's right.
And I see that with kids who've been raised in the church, that they know all the words, they know how to do this, but they don't have an attitude of surrender. And so it doesn't affect their marriages. And we're watching marriages fail. We're watching them struggle. You know, the next generation,
we're watching them struggle.
Or we're watching them leave the church.
Yep.
Because there wasn't that element. I want you to unpack the word surrender.
Well, before I even do that, your question, I think, is so brilliant. Because one of the things that we can rest on is a surrender I did 30 years ago. You know, so even it's not just the kids having to surrender their parents' faith to grab their own. It's that I have to surrender the faith that I had 10 years ago or five years ago or last year to re-embrace whatever new thing God is doing. Because he's always, Jesus has this great line, my Father is always working. That's why he said in defense of his work on the Sabbath, that's why I am always at work. And so there's a sense in which surrender is a posture of heart in the same way humility and dependence is, far more than just a moment. Now, sometimes it's expressed in a moment, but what I find is that God cooperates most when we decide to humble ourselves before him.
Okay, so what does that look like?
Well, for me, it looks like, on the one hand, God allowing or introducing, however you understand it, a depression and anxiety, a child with Down syndrome, the death of my father, my stepfather, my father-in-law, all within 3 years, and sitting in all of that mess that all coagulated together at once and going, I got nothing. I'm like Peter. You know, where else are we going to go? You alone have the words of eternal life, but I've got nothing. And seeing me be surprised in that moment. That's where we get the title of the book, Astonished, that it's in those moments where you least expect it that God does some of his best stuff. So then it becomes building markers. See, I've always heard you build Ebenezers, you build memorials, you build markers around all of the highs. Well, what I've started doing is build markers around all of the lows and learning to lament in those. See, one of the things the church does very poorly is that we don't teach people how to grieve. So all we've got are cliches. We've got cards, casseroles, and cliches. We don't teach people how to grieve even remotely. So you're at a funeral for a guy that was a contractor, and literally people would say to me, well, you know, God must have needed somebody to build more mansions in heaven. And you just go, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard, right? Far better, the ancient Jewish practice of just interrupting and coming into a house and then just sitting there and being quiet. The Psalms give us so much room and language to say, God, why have you done this? Why have you forsaken us? Why have you allowed this? And we don't avail ourselves of that. We think that somehow that's opposite the journey of faith or opposite the heart of worship. And that's just so not true. So part of what I've done and still have to remind myself is to build the memorials to lament, build the memorials to pain, and to go back there and remember how scary it was, how awful it felt, and what God ended up doing.
Yeah, that's great. Great input. You know, he's there in our darker times. That's a great reminder as well. Sometimes we don't see him or feel him, but he is there. Thank you for being with us. Incredible conversation today.
I'm honored. Thank you.
And that concludes Dr. Jim Burns' conversation with Mike Erie here on the Homeward Broadcast. Mike's a pastor here in Southern California, formerly the pastor of Rock Harbor Church, moved on to Mariners and Mission Viejo before settling into his current position with the First Evangelical Free Church in Fullerton. He's a well-known author. He's a popular speaker. His latest book is called Astonished, and we have it up at homeward.com if you want to take a look at it there. I also want to remind you that Jim's book, Faith Conversations for Families, is a great companion piece to the conversation that we had here on today's program. If you as a parent know that your kids are looking for those extreme experiences that kind of inform their faith and their life, how do you incorporate those experiences into the faith journey? Well, Jim's book, Faith Conversations for Families, helps you do just that. You can order the book anywhere. It's available wherever Christian books are sold. But when you do buy it from homeward.com, a portion of the proceeds goes to supporting our ministry, and we appreciate that financial support at homeward.com.
Thanks, Roger, and thank you for your ongoing prayers and your financial support to make it possible for us to bring you great programs like today's program. Your partnership also enables us to extend the reach of Homeward into areas like our events, publications, online ministries, our daily devotional and monthly parenting newsletter. And if you don't know about that, then I encourage you to go to homeward.com. We appreciate your financial support, especially today. We could use it. And we're not looking just for people to support us once. We want a growing number of people to come alongside the Homeward movement. Let's make a difference in families together. And obviously, you can give us a call. Roger gives the number often. You can go to homeward.com and get all the information you need to become a part of the Homeward financial family in many ways. You're helping us reach out, not just here in the United States, but around the world. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for listening today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.